Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 4,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 110 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at Powerslam.tv.
All right, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. We are back for the first time here in 2019. New year, same voices. I am Patrick, Danny Danger, Mika Villa is with me. Guys, happy new year again. Great to be talking to you guys again. I survived Peru. It has not killed me, even though it has tried. How are you guys doing this evening?
I mean, it certainly did seem to try this past time. You know, anybody following on social media found out that you managed to get sick pretty early in your vacation, which is definitely not the way you want to spend a vacation. Is sick. So we're glad you're feeling better. We're glad you're back in the States. You know, a lot of wrestling stuff happened while you were gone. We'll try to fill you in.
We're happy to have you back in all your glory, your Americanized glory. The Peruvian poo, as I'm calling it, tried to get you, but we brought you back to America, where we're going to make you stronger, faster, better, stronger. Let's do this.
Well, we definitely do have a lot to talk about, because we've missed a lot. Of course, we last took a look at Wrestle Kingdom 13 and see where things were going, just with that show kicking off the year, and let's look at the results and kind of go from there. So we had the gauntlet match to determine the number one contenders for the Never Open Weight six-man tag team championships, and your winners were Togi Makabe, Toru Yano, and Taguchi, and they were going to fight or wrestle the champions the next night on New Year's Dash. Will Ospreay defeated Kota Ibushi for the Never Open Weight Championship. Bushi and Shingo defeated Kaneramu and El Desperado and Roppongi 3K to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Tomohiro Ishii to win the British Heavyweight Championship. Sonata and Evil defeated the Guerrillas of Destiny and the Young Bucks to win the IWGP Tag Team Championships. Juice Robinson defeated Cody Rhodes to win the United States Championship. Taiyo Ishimori, the Bone Soldier, defeated Kushida to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Jay White defeated Okada. Naito defeated Chris Jericho to win the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. And in your main event of the evening, the Ace of New Japan, Hiroshi Tanahashi, defeated the Cleaner, Kenny Omega, to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. A lot of title changes on this card. A lot of changes, period, going on for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Before we talk a little bit about the exodus of New Japan Pro Wrestling for 2019, your thoughts on some of these matches, which ones stood out to you guys, and which match was your best of the night?
Well, I mean, I felt watching the show that it was a good show. I enjoyed it overall, but there wasn't a whole lot of, as far as match-wise, that stood out to me. Every single title changed hands. Every single championship changed hands. That was kind of unusual, and I get it. It's like their WrestleMania, so sometimes it's kind of the end of feuds, but every single finish was also very definitive. There were not really any finishes to these matches that were, you know, left room for debate. Every single loser was defeated clearly, cleanly, you know, left lying in the ring. It felt as, and a lot of people talked about it, as though it was kind of like they were doing a reset. Move all the championships, literally, you know, you break all those stories. Like, these guys don't have any other reason to fight now, because there is no ifs, ands, or buts about who the better man is or was. So it kind of gave it an odd feel, but like I said, I didn't really feel that there was any big matches that stood out. Now, going back and watching the show a second time, I would have to say my favorite match would be, Tomohiro Ishii versus Zack Sabre Jr. for the British Openweight, or British Heavyweight Championship. I just felt that there was just something special about that match. The back and forth was fast and furious. Zack staying on, varying his submissions as Ishii's trying to overpower him and just kind of outmaneuver and stay running, and coming at him with hard strikes. I felt that that match told the best story. It was a story that actually went back and, you know, felt like you didn't know who was going to win. And the win came surprisingly with, you know, Ishii submitting. But pretty much, I enjoyed the show, but it's not one that I really felt like a whole lot of matches took away individually and stood out.
I think maybe because it's so far removed from us, some of the excitement has worn off. When it was fresher, it was more exciting just to kind of go through and watch this as it was happening live. I loved Juice Robinson defeating Cody. And again, like you said, every title changed hands. Cody, of course, going off not just for AEW, but he had an injury, a surgery, so it was almost, you know, predetermined that he was not going to keep that IWGP United States Championship. But Brandy getting involved, getting thrown out, you know, I love how Brandy and Cody do their little costuming together. It's really cool. So I love that match. And Chris Jericho, Jericho, Naito, that no disqualification match, anything goes for the title. Jericho is unreal. Just to sit back and to watch him, knowing that he's been doing this for, God, for 850 years, it seems like, and it's not like he's lost a step. He is as good as he once was. I will quote the country song. And he just makes everything better. Watching him with Naito, who's already great, but just watching him and going, holy crap, look at these two go. I loved it. That, for me, was my match of the night.
The full show, to me, I thought overall it flowed very well. I actually enjoyed watching the whole thing. I didn't watch it live. I watched it on the replay, but it was an easy watch. Again, because of all the expected exoduses and words, you know, of injuries and things like that, kind of had an idea of what was happening with some of these matches. Maybe that took a little bit away from some of them. But to me, I was really excited about Ospreay versus Ibushi, Sabre Jr. versus Ishii, Ishimori versus Kushida. And, of course, Omega and Tanahashi. I thought that those four matches were my favorite ones. With the best one, I'll have to give it to Ibushi and Ospreay. I thought as the true opener of the show, it was a great way to open the show. It was fantastic. Two of the best wrestlers in the world. Kota Ibushi, of course, one of my top 10 wrestlers of 2018. But yeah, I thought that match had a lot of great stuff. And Ospreay winning the championship, not what I was expecting, if I remember correctly, on my predictions. But yeah, it was just a fun match, but overall a fun show. A lot of title changes, like we've already talked about. It's really becoming a reset. I think that this is happening to them every couple of years, where they have not exactly a mass exodus, but a significant one, and they have to reset. And we're gonna have to see what's gonna happen, because at the last reset, when they lost AJ Styles and Nakamura and the Good Brothers, you know, they had Omega, the Bucks, Cody coming in, amongst others, you know, Naito and Ishii, and of course Okada was ruling the world at that point. Now, who's the next guy? Is it going to be Jay White? Because as we saw on on New Year's Dash, amongst all of the multi-man matches that we got, one thing that we really got was that Jay White was the guy. And he was pretty much the focal point as far as talking about New Year's Dash. Of course, with Bullet Club, you know, and with Yujiro and Chase Owens rejoining Bullet Club, I guess. And, man, I think that right now they're putting all their chips. They got Jay White. They got the Ace with the championship. Okada, it's, you know, always a great guy to have in their pocket. But who do you guys see as the next people in New Japan that are going to come out and rise? Because outside of like four or five guys that could be the top guys, I'm just not seeing, maybe I'm just not paying a lot of attention to the roster, but I'm not seeing guys that will take my attention the way that some of the guys that they've lost.
I think it's more of going back to utilizing who they want. Like, and they, you know, New Japan kind of expressed they're not looking to sign any new foreigners, unless, you know, as far as I guess kind of low level indie talent. I think they're you know, they said unless somebody's been kind of in, you know, unless they're leaving WWE, basically, they're not looking to sign anybody. They're not looking to sign a bunch of Americans, a bunch of gaijins. So I think it's a focus to back to the core Japanese group. And so I guess you elevate and utilize who you have. You know, LIJ is the big thing there. I mean, we kind of talked and we reviewed it, you know, kind of did our preview of the show. Who's over in the United States isn't necessarily the same as who's over in Japan. You know, you look at some of the people that are hugely over in Japan, you know, like guys like Toru Yano and, you know, Rusuke Taguchi, that, you know, don't really connect as well with the American audiences, but are ridiculously over there. You know, LIJ is the huge thing there. And it's still decent here, but I still think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, in the United States, a lot of people are still with the Bullet Club. But I think they kind of go back and go with some of that stuff. You know, once New Year's Dash came out, it kind of gave us a little bit better picture of who was staying, who was going, where people were going, how things were set up, were going to be set up. So I think it's just kind of, I don't even know if there's people that are going to be replacing spots or if they're just essentially thinning out the roster a bit and refocus on, you know, the battles between the Bullet Club and Suzuki-Gun and LIJ and Chaos and kind of go back to some of that stuff in this coming year. I think that, I think, is where it's kind of going more so than hiring a lot of new people to take spots.
I think the name of the game is always New Japan has their young lions. They have people in their talent pool who they want to bring up and to elevate as they've done over the years. Prime example being Jay White. Yes, he's a foreigner, but he's been in their system for so long. It is like he is one of their own. So I think what they're looking to do by not actively hiring any foreign talent is to dig into the talent pool that they already have and to reestablish themselves in Japanese wrestling in general. So we'll see how that goes. They were never, I don't think, in it for the popularity that they gained with their influx of foreigners and how so many, you know, foreign-born people are now rolling through there, becoming stars, or that being the testing ground, so to speak. So I think maybe they're kind of going back to their roots and just kind of establishing the wrestling being the number one priority. And that will probably be over as hell because that is what made everybody fall in love with New Japan to begin with.
Yeah, and I think another thing that New Year's Dash showed us is that at this point, LIJ should be a babyface group. And the fact that, you know, they had Suzuki-Gun basically destroy him at New Year's Dash is going to give us that. It's going to give us the chance as fans to be able to cheer and embrace them as babyfaces, even though their attitude may not necessarily change.
They'll be cool heels, basically.
They're needed. They're very much needed on the babyface side, because right now you have the Bullet Club, and you have Los Ingobernables de Japón, you have Suzuki-Gun, and you have Chaos as the four main stables there. So you got to even things out. So you got Suzuki-Gun, and you have Bullet Club on one side, and then on the other side you'll have Chaos, and of course Los Ingobernables de Japón, and we'll see what happens from there. But now, of course, New Year's Dash did lead us through a better picture of where they're heading, and of course that means that we are gonna have the New Beginning shows February 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Some of the matches scheduled, I'm not gonna go over all the shows that are happening. But on the 2nd, we're going to get Sonata versus Suzuki-Gun, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Evil, and your main event, Okada and Tanahashi versus Jay White and Bad Luck Fale. Then the next day, we're going to have the 2nd New Beginning show. And that one is, of course, the 2nd one in Sapporo. And that was going to be headlined by Naito defending the Intercontinental Championship against Taichi. And Sonata and Evil defending the Tag Team Championships against Zack Sabre Jr. and Minoru Suzuki. And the 3rd title match will be Shingo and Bushi versus El Desperado and Kanemaru. So pretty much here we have LIJ versus Suzuki-Gun basically headlining the 2nd Sapporo show with a few title matches. And then that leads us to New Beginning show on February 11th in Osaka. And that one will be headlined by Tanahashi defending his IWGP Championship against Jay White. And of course, Okada versus Bad Luck Fale. And Ishimori is going to be defending the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship against Taguchi. And then, of course, multi-man matches getting the rest of the cards. But that kind of gives us a pretty good picture of where New Japan is heading. And, you know, everybody liked to say in 2018 that Bullet Club was fine. I think that in 2019, New Japan Pro Wrestling is going to be fine. You know, you can even see that by the fact that three shows that they're having in the United States are all sold out. And, of course, so much can be said about those shows, but they're sold out, as same as the New Beginning shows in New Japan. And that just tells you that New Japan Pro Wrestling is fine. And, you know, only time will tell on how fine they are. But so right now, it is their time to, you know, invest in the roster they have and see where they go from there. What are you guys looking forward to the most here in the new era of New Japan Pro Wrestling?
I guess I'm interested to see it kind of go back more to, as you kind of discussed, you know, traditional, you know, faction warfare, some sustained, you know, I mean, it's very, very big in Japan, you know, a lot of different big Japan promotion, not just New Japan. So I'm interested to see where it goes. I like the Suzuki-gun group. I like, you know, majority of the members of the big factions. So I'm very interested to see where these stories go. You know, Tai Chi going for Naito's Intercontinental Championship. You know, Tanahashi versus Jay White should be a really good match. You know, I'm not sure if Jay White's going to win the title on his first get or not. I mean, he did beat, you know, Kenny Omega, Tanahashi, and Okada in, you know, in the G1. He beat all those guys. So, I mean, it's obvious that they want him as, you know, as a top-level player. I just don't know if he's going to be getting the championship right away. But I am really interested. I did watch all the Fantascomania shows too. I really enjoyed that. I think it's a different feel to things as well. So I'm really interested, you know, they're gonna deliver the quality matches, and they're going to have I'm not really concerned about the quality of New Japan changing because of talent leaving or coming in. I think it'll stay pretty much consistent.
Back to basics. I believe, again, as I said earlier, that is the name of the game, that the focus is going to go back to the Japanese style of wrestling, and just kind of not so much redefining, but just re-emphasizing what that means as a whole for New Japan as a company. Again, they've had over the years lots of talent come into the New Japan system through the dojos, rising up through the ranks. A lot of the today's or these future players here can be traced back into the dojo. So the fact that the emphasis is, again, strongly Japanese, and anyone who has been in that system is not surprising. And I think that is how they move forward to set themselves apart from the rest of the wrestling world.
So moving on, let's talk about some of the exodus of New Japan. And of course, let's begin with the All Elite Wrestling guys. Cody, the Young Bucks, Hangman Page, all are going to be part of All Elite Wrestling. Of course, with the Jacksons and Cody and Brandy in executive roles. And of course, Tony Khan, a member of the Khan family who owned the Jacksonville Jaguars, are fronting up the cash, the money, for All Elite Wrestling. And together with Cody and the Bucks are going to be putting out All Elite Wrestling. And of course, that comes with their second show, of course, following the success of All In, Double or Nothing, which I believe is happening in May in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand. So here so far is the roster that we know we'll have. We have Chris Jericho, Christopher Daniels, Cody Rhodes, Frankie Kazarian, Hangman Page, Joey Janela, The Young Bucks, MJF, Pac, Scorpio Sky, and Jungle Boy, and the male wrestlers. The female wrestlers, Brandi Rhodes, Britt Baker, Penelope Ford. And helping, producing backstage, we'll have Billy Gunn, BJ Whitmer, and Jeff Jones. So far, a pretty good amount of the indie talent now. Not gone for the independents. I don't think they're going to be 100% exclusive. They'll have some leeway to work on the shows. But, yeah, what a way to start out All Elite Wrestling.
I mean, I think it's kind of more like an Impact Wrestling contract, you know? As of now, there's only a couple events announced, so they can't realistically pay these people enough money for them not to wrestle other places. You know, they talk, you know, yeah, we'll try to pay wrestlers better and, you know, take care of our wrestlers better and everything, and that's good. But I don't think they're going to be able to pay these guys to sit around and not wrestle. So I think it's kind of more like an Impact Wrestling contract. You know, these guys can be places and they will be places, you know, but it's probably a little bit few and far between, at least initially, you know, it probably restricts them from television in the United States, you know, like an ROH or an Impact contract would do. But it is an interesting group. I assume they'll still use people, you know, for one-offs, maybe as well. I mean, this is obviously kind of the core group, the big names, so to speak. Matt Jackson did mention that they would be doing a working agreements with, you know, other companies, including Ring of Honor, including New Japan, including OWE, which is actually Oriental Wrestling Entertainment in China. So, you know, those are kind of the core American, you know, the core guys that you'll see at most of the shows. And then, I guess we'll see different varying talent as well. But I mean, they got a lot of hype and that's good. They're meant to, but I think some of the fans are kind of buying into it a little too much. Oh man, Vince is going to be mad. He better be, you know, he's going to be shaking. They're going to be competition for WWE. And yes, but not quite so soon, I don't think. You know, I think some people are being a little optimistic about what they can do. You know, like, it's just, you need to give them time to develop, you know, before they're seen as a quote unquote threat to World Wrestling Entertainment.
It's all about the hype. It's all about getting excitement in the wrestling world. Wrestling fans are easy to appease when you give them what they want. They've been asking for some company to viably give Vince competition. Cody leaving the WWE, striking out on his own in the independent world, doing everything he's done at this point, has given a glimmer of hope to wrestling fans that there is an alternative to the E that is just as good. The Young Bucks have been merchandising and just putting themselves out there and putting themselves over so much that now these guys have come together. They've gotten a, as we like to say in the business, a money mark to buy them their own federation. What more could you ask for? What more can we ask for? Details. And that's what we're lacking of. There's hype. There's contracts. There's big name independent players with the potential for more. There are people pandering on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm pretty sure sliding to people's phones and DMs and friends of friends to try to get, you know, to be a part of All Elite Wrestling. It's all well and good until we figure out what it actually means. Two events does not a wrestling promotion makes. It's a special event or special events at best. So what I'm waiting on, I'm excited to see what they do, but I need more details to just sit back and blindly follow, like you said, as I'm unfortunately not able to do. I am confident that whatever their real goal is, which again, we don't know what their, you know, their business plan is, so to speak. But whatever it is, I'm sure that with the minds of Cody, the Young Bucks, and just people in general, BJ Whitmer, Billy Gunn, whatever it is that they want to do, they will be able to do as long as it's feasible. What I mean by feasible is if they're going to try to take on the machine being the E, then that's not really a feasible plan. CWCW, CTNA, see all those other companies that were not able to take them on. But if they stay in their lane and continue to be like a super American indie, then they can by all means keep wrestling fans happy as they've done so far with just announcing their promotion.
All In was being a success helped, of course, with the huge backing of Ring of Honor, as many already knew, but more as people found out now that Ring of Honor owns the rights to All In. So again, showing how much more they were invested than people may have thought, or more than Cody and the Bucks may want to have people think, you know, that they were just helping out with production. No, I think there was a lot more backing by Ring of Honor to make All In happen. And now that they have the cons to help once again back their product, their vision, and Cody and the Bucks, you know, they are very popular. They are money-making machines. So they will have success. But again, like Mika said, you know, they can sell out some shows, but can they have a real promotion that sustains? I mean, you look at MLW and what they've been able to do. First, you know, running a few shows in Orlando, then after a year of successful shows, moving, you know, in other cities, going to New York, Chicago, Pennsylvania. I know that they've been trying to come to Atlanta as well. There is a formula, and, you know, they're bringing a lot of big names. You know, of course, with Pac being a huge name, as he not only will he be wrestling for All Elite Wrestling in 2019, but he will also be a part of WrestleCon, and he'll be wrestling in various shows there as well. And that's a big get for All Elite, as is Chris Jericho. I mean, Chris Jericho may not necessarily be on his prime, however, he is a huge name, and somebody who for a long time would not work anywhere outside in the United States that wasn't WWE. So him doing this also big. So more to come, more to see with All Elite Wrestling. See what happens with it. Wish him all the success in the world. And I'll definitely be checking out their shows when they come out. But the biggest question are the two asterisks in the exodus of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And that is two of now New Japan Pro Wrestling's former champions, Kenny Omega and Kushida. Where are they going? Kushida, his goal, of course, is to go out and wrestle in more places all over the world. And Kenny Omega, well, he stayed quiet as far as where he's going. If he was truly going to All Elite Wrestling, you would have thought he would have been at the press conference and announced, but he wasn't. So where are they going?
Yeah, I mean, let the speculation begin, I guess. And with Kushida, he did, you know, most people assume he meant going to WWE, you know, presumably going to 205 Live or what some of the other rumors have stated about where Kushida's going. Based on him saying he wanted to travel the world and wrestle, you know, so, but he does still have contract with New Japan through the end of this month. You know, January 29th will be Kushida's last event with New Japan. He gets his wish that he made at the press conference post, you know, when he first announced that he would not be re-signing with New Japan. He said, you know, his regret was only getting, you know, that he wouldn't have one more one-on-one matchup with Tanahashi, ace versus ace. Tanahashi was there. They kind of made the match. They made the match there and made it official. So it seems that Kushida may be going to WWE now. Kenny Omega has not said anything. You know, so of course everybody wants him to be in the Royal Rumble this Sunday. Now, whether that is the case or not, who knows? You know, but I think it's a lot more likely that Kenny does sign with WWE rather than just coming and moving stateside and working indies or signing with Ring of Honor or something. Is he, you know, it's obvious that he wasn't doing Ring of Honor either. He didn't do them nearly as much as some of the other Elite members did. So I think they're probably both did rebound. I mean, realistically, the money and the, you know, financial security that New Japan can provide to both of those guys, I don't think you're just going to give that up unless you're going to get something similar. And I don't think, and there's, you know, there's only really one place that can offer that kind of contract with working that many dates, you know, and that is World Wrestling Entertainment.
Kenny and Kushida, the two big, huge players out there, free agents, if you will. I think it's pretty much, like you said, a foregone conclusion that Kushida is going to the WWE. He's somebody who's entertaining. He is, of course, a cruiserweight size. He's someone who can easily slip into an NXT role. Another Japanese sensation, if you will, even though he's not as big as a Nakamura or any of their other gets they've gotten, he is still a prime candidate to excite and to educate the WWE universe on Japanese wrestling, especially if they would keep him as, you know, this kind of time splitter, Back to the Future type deal, which, who knows, maybe, probably not, but WWE has money to burn. They might pull the gimmick and, you know, have Michael J. Fox show up and endorse him. It's possible. But I think Kenny Omega, of course, the bigger of the two names out of those two. And where Kenny is going, his silence is golden. It's really interesting because we're so used to having instant access and answers to questions like this of, yes, his contract is up and he will be doing this. And we are still waiting to figure out what his next move is. I think that the waiting game is to the benefit of All Elite Wrestling. I think that perhaps having Omega in their back pocket in case, in the unlikely case, but in the case that ticket sales do not go as planned, or perhaps they're just something. I'm not sure what, but I think that they pull a Omega out of the hat, and they may spice up their pot and potential to anybody out there looking to get in on the All Elite Wrestling. Omega probably has had, well, not probably, I'm sure he has had tons of WWE money and people in his ear, blank checks being sent his way. He has people he has talked to, I'm sure, in the WWE who have either, you know, said this is the way. Stay indie, my friend, stay indie. I think, though, again, that his silence means he is not going to WWE because they would have said something somehow or other. I think he will be staying in his indie background, or in his indie state with his former Bullet Club or Bullet Club members, whatever you want to call them. Omega, All Elite Wrestling.
So I want to see both Kushida and Omega in WWE. Let's not forget, Kenny Omega used to work for the Fed. You know, he was part of the developmental. And he, you know, he left on his own, knowing that he needed to go away. And he was not, it was not the right time. He left, became one of the best in the world. And, you know, I think that maybe he definitely wants to come back and come and do what he knows he can and be one of the best in WWE. And we've seen many people do that. We see people come, not be ready for some reason, or not just be the right time, and leave, go elsewhere, come back, and be better than ever. As far as Kushida, well, you know, I think Kushida has seen how his fellow Japan mates have been treated. You know, you have, you know, Itami and Nakamura is two of the main guys right there. And I think that he can be very successful in any of the rosters in WWE. So will we see them in WWE? Only time will tell. Of course, the Royal Rumble is a place where people like to make big debuts, make those surprise appearances. And right now, WWE needs all the star power they can get. Roman Reigns is a huge loss for WWE. Not having John Cena on a full-time basis is a huge loss for WWE. You know, Brock Lesnar, you know, being a part-time headlining champion is not very good for the WWE. They need more stars to headline. And I think that if AJ Styles taught the WWE anything, is that they can bring the smaller guys and make lots of money with them. So I think the time is now. Omega and Kushida go to the WWE. It would make no sense for them to not be in the WWE at this point. They should be somewhere. Of course, Kushida still has, you know, to finish out his contract with New Japan. But Omega, I think it's very possible we'll see him on Sunday. Now, moving on, I just briefly want to bring up NXT UK, and we haven't really talked about it much, but they just recently had their first ever takeover event, and here's what happened. On the main card, Zach Gibson and James Drake defeated Mustache Mountain to win the inaugural Tag Team Championships. Finn Balor replaced Travis Banks to defeat Jordan Devlin. Dave Mastiff defeated Eddie Dennis in a no DQ match, which, you know, had everything. Tables, chairs, you name it. Of course, Mastiff putting Dennis to the table before taking the W. Toni Storm defeated Rhea Ripley to win the Women's Championship. And Pete Dunne defeated Joe Coffey to retain the UK Championship. And, of course, the big news at the end of the show, as Pete Dunne was celebrating his victory, Walter made his first ever appearance on NXT UK TV as he came out and confronted Pete Dunne, which I'm telling you, I watched it for the first time this evening before we started recording, and I got a little bit of goosebumps. Of course, Walter, my number one best wrestler of 2018. But I would say the show, pretty good. You got heel, you know, tag team champions. Finn Balor making a surprise appearance. The crowd was over the moon about it. But the two questions I have for you guys. First of all, about, you know, your thoughts. Was it about time that the Mae Young Classic winner, Toni Storm, finally had gold around her waist? And two, thoughts on Walter in WWE?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people were just, you know, well, not a lot of people, but some people were disappointed that Rhea Ripley didn't get to have a longer championship reign. You know, but yes, winning the Mae Young Classic, you know, has, you know, your first winner, Kairi Sane, you know, moved seemingly, you know, she moved a little bit more quickly towards the championship. So maybe that was part of it with Tony. They were just waiting until the UK division to give her the championship rather than have her in the US, as part of the, you know, traditional NXT brand. You never know. I think, I mean, they're still kind of debuting people. They signed some people to contracts. You know, I think with Tony winning is a feel good story, you know, because she has kind of been the underdog. You know, she's in the first NYC as a quarter finalist and won the second year. So I think that plays well into her character of, you know, even when the chips look down, she still kind of continues to fight. You know, she was probably billed as the underdog against Rhea Ripley just because of the size and power difference. You know, but Tony's been around the world and won championships everywhere she's been. So it was, you know, really kind of just a matter of time before she'd hold WWE gold, and, you know, wondering how long she holds this and what more championship gold she has in her future.
Yeah, it was long overdue. Again, whatever the reason the wait was, sometimes the WWE slow plays us and gives us what we were looking for just not at the time that we wanted it. So I think this is one of those things where the buildup was there, the anticipation was there, and this was one of those moments where with Toni Storm winning, we could all collectively rejoice and celebrate and be happy for her accomplishment. So yeah, while Rhea is one to definitely watch, Tony's the one that has definitely got superstardom written so much all over her that I would not be surprised. I'm pretty sure we will see both Rhea and Tony in the Women's Royal Rumble coming up this Sunday. As far as Walter in the WWE, Walter in the NXT UK, just Walter in general has always been exciting, but it was just almost surreal to see him in that WWE product. And is the UK brand? I know a lot of people over here in the Americas were enjoying that just as much as like you were, and I certainly was myself. So let's see what else happens. Alter killing Pete Dunne. I mean, that could be on tap. We could be in for a slobber knocker or a banger, as the kids say.
A murder, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait. Yeah, but NXT UK TakeOver in Blackpool was a success, in my opinion. I really enjoyed it. And I think for me, something that, you know, I will say, I usually watch the shows on mute. But sometimes for this show, I go off the mute a little bit so I can hear the crowds, because these crowds in the UK are really fun to hear.
I mean, there's a lot of singing. There's a lot of singing out of this crowd, which is kind of disheartening to a lot of people to hear crowds singing in unison.
Well, look, Mika and I, of course, have had the pleasure of sitting amongst these crowds at Progress shows in the U.S. in Orlando and New Orleans. And I mean, it's not it's the same as being in the U.K., I will say, I'm sure. But we got a little taste of what that felt like. And that's pretty fun to be around, I'll say. You know, even if you can't understand half what people are saying, you still sing along with them, because it's just it's contagious, and it's fun and it's entertaining. So, yep, TakeOver UK NXT was great. I can't wait to see the rest of the shows that have happened in the last few weeks. And, of course, see where things are going. Of course, this weekend, Royal Rumble weekend, Phoenix, Arizona. The NXT UK talent will be here. Some of them will be participating in a Worlds Collide tournament that will be included. Not only NXT UK, but NXT and 205 Live talent. But as well as they'll be doing some tapings for future NXT UK episodes on the WWE Network. But the biggest thing about this weekend, though, are two of the biggest shows of the year. And one of them is one of Danny's favorites, NXT TakeOver. As those are probably some of the best shows or network specials to watch, because it's such a great formula. Five matches, really strong, lots of great stories of the past two-ish months or whatnot. And here is the card for NXT TakeOver Phoenix. Matt Riddle versus Cassius Ohno. Ricochet defends the North American Championship against Johnny Gargano. The Undisputed Era will defend the Tag Team Championships versus the War Raiders. Shayna Baszler will be defending the Women's Championship against Bianca Belair. And Tommaso Ciampa will be defending the NXT Championship against Aleister Black.
It's a solid five matches, and it shows that, you know, with some of the more recent NXT call-ups, you know, it shows who's there and who's where, you know, who's sticking around for at least a little while longer. I'm interested and intrigued by the rise of Bianca Belair. You know, they had always kind of pushed her until recently as kind of like a heel, just because of her kind of cocky attitude. But you know, the people were taken to it, and you know, they kind of gave the crowd a little bit of a reason to get behind her. You know, against Shayna, she's being pushed as the underdog hero. You know, I think that'll be for an intriguing matchup. You know, Johnny kind of playing this heel-ish persona still. You know, we saw at the end of this week's NXT, you know, it looked as though, you know, Johnny and and Tommaso were going to shake hands again, and Candace comes in and steps in the way and pushes Johnny out and says, "This isn't you, this isn't who you are anymore. Like, you know, you're past that, you're past that," trying to kind of keep him to the side of right, I guess. So that be interesting to see what, you know, the further developing story of Johnny. You know, do we get a new champion? Does Johnny finally achieve singles gold? You know, in NXT, you know, he tried so many times unsuccessfully against different champions for the championship. You know, is Ricochet in the North American Championship, you know, where he finally achieves that, remains to be seen. You know, just yet again, as you mentioned, five matches, all of them are given good time to develop stories, to tell, you know, good stories with the characters. So we'll just, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a good show. I know it. They always are. You know, a lot of times they're better shows than the main pay-per-view, but Royal Rumble's a different beast. I say Riddle gets revenge against Cassius Ohno, you know, in a much more back and forth contest than their first meeting. I say Undisputed Era retains against the War Raiders. I think they're just kind of the underhanded tactics, the numbers game with the additional members on the outside, will be enough to win the fight against War Raiders. I think that Johnny does get the title from Ricochet. I think Shayna retains against Belair. And I think Tommaso Ciampa retains against Aleister Black. I think Aleister Black is not long for NXT. I think he, you know, may be headed to the main roster sooner rather than later.
Well, we talk about this every takeover, that the takeovers are sometimes better than the main pay-per-view, which it precedes. Five matches, again, we say the word solid because that's exactly what they are. These takeover matches are just a culmination of all the television in all the matches that the NXT brand has put on, and it's a good payoff. I'm hardly ever disappointed with a takeover, and I don't think this one is going to be the exception to that rule. As far as the... It's Bro's birthday, so I'm a little worried as we roll just a little bit past his birthday. But I think Riddle might be able to overcome the knockout artist, the resident knockout artist of NXT. I say Ricochet retains. I think that Gargano's struggles will make it just enough that Ricochet somehow will pull this one out and keep that title. Same thing with Undisputed Era. They're definitely going Raiders, even though I in a row, and you know, one of them is recently married to a certain member of the Riot Squad, but we don't get into that. Shayna Baszler is going to I see her ripping Bianca Belair's ponytail off and beating her with it. If that doesn't happen, I will be just a tad bit disappointed, but Baszler is the female Brock Lesnar who shows up for work. So I think she retains, and I agree with you that Aleister Black is probably on his way to the main roster, but I think that he slips up and trips up Ciampa for the win.
NXT TakeOvers, Phoenix is gonna be great. I have no doubts, and I'm gonna look forward to seeing, not only Matt Riddle defeat Cassius Ohno, but maybe even knock him out. Ricochet will retain the North American Championship. The War Raiders will become the new tag team champions. Shayna Baszler will send their EST back to the end of the line. And Tommaso Ciampa will retain the NXT championship. Like Danny, I also believe he will be on his way to the main roster. And no reason to keep the title on him at this point. Tommaso Ciampa is doing a great job with the belt. And I think that there's still a lot more story with him as champion and with Johnny. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, so that will be on Saturday night on WWE Network. They'll be live at the Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix, Arizona. But then the next night, the second biggest show of the year for the WWE. And this will be not in an arena, but a baseball stadium at Chase Field, an open stadium where they will be having the Royal Rumble. It won't be the greatest Royal Rumble. It won't be the biggest Royal Rumble, but it will be maybe one of the best Royal Rumbles in recent history. Here is your card. In the pre-show, Rusev will be defending the United States Championship against Shinsuke Nakamura. And Buddy Murphy will be defending the Cruiserweight Championship in a Fatal 4-Way match against Tozawa, Hiroyu Tami, and Kalisto. And then, in your main card, in no particular order, Brock Lesnar will be defending the Universal Championship against Finn Balor. The new Daniel Bryan will be defending the WWE Championship against the real AJ Styles. Asuka will be defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against the man, Becky Lynch. Ronda Rousey will be defending the Raw Women's Championship against Sasha Banks. And The Bar will be defending the SmackDown Tag Team Championships versus The Miz and the Shane McMahon, the best tag team in the world. And of course, the men's and women's Royal Rumble matches where the winners will earn a championship match at WrestleMania 35. I'm going to start with my predictions. Nakamura is going to win the United States Championship. Buddy Murphy is going to retain the Cruiserweight Championship. The Bar will retain the Tag Team Championships. Ronda Rousey will retain the Women's Championship. The Man will win the SmackDown Women's Championship. The new Daniel Bryan will retain the WWE Championship, though I feel like with shenanigans, somehow AJ Styles may get the W. Brock Lesnar will retain the Brock Lesnar will retain the Universal Championship. As far as who's going to win the Royal Rumble, I honestly don't know. There's no way I can predict this, so I'm not even going to try. But those are my predictions for the matches on the card. Your thoughts on the 2019 WWE Royal Rumble?
All right, I'll try to run quick and not give too much about some of the earlier matches. I think Rusev retains, the Bar retains. I mean, this is me hoping Hideo Itami finally wins championship gold in the WWE and wins the Cruiserweight Championship. His stuff on 205 Live is outstanding. I think with the two women's championship matches, I think to ignite the feud and the match between Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey, I think you have to have at least one of them interfere in each other's matches. And so I don't see either, you know, maybe Sasha Banks wins the championship, you know, because Becky costs Ronda the match. And then, you know, Ronda then comes out and costs Becky the match, so that neither of them have a championship when they go towards their match at WrestleMania. You can have more women's matches on the show and not have to worry about a championship being defended. I feel Daniel Bryan's going to retain his stuff as the new Daniel Bryan. The promos and all that is just firing so well. There's no reason not to have him with a championship. I want Finn Balor to win, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I think, you know, I think the fans kind of want somebody who'll be there more readily. I think Finn has the level of popularity now that would be needed for him to hold that championship, at least leading into WrestleMania. So I think I'll go with Finn. Women's Royal Rumble match is hard. The obvious answer, of course, would be Charlotte, but I want to say they would do somebody else, but I can't really think of who that somebody else might be right now. For the Men's Royal Rumble, the way they've been building it pretty much, to me, it seems it's either going to be Braun Strowman or Samoa Joe. Those seem to be the two guys on their individual shows with the biggest momentum. So I think it's either going to be one of two of those guys. Preferably, my preference would be Samoa Joe. Just as I've, you know, been a Samoa Joe fan since 2003. So to see him win the Royal Rumble and head to WrestleMania in a, you know, for one of the championships, would just be a lot of fun for me personally.
I like that. I agree with some of this. Rusev continues his United States Championship reign. I think the besties in the world pick up this SmackDown Tag Team Championship. I like what you said about Sasha winning via shenanigans. I see that happening, and we're going to pause on what Ronda does and retaliation. Becky beats Asuka. The man comes around and reclaims her championship. Oh my gosh. The new Daniel Bryan. I love AJ Styles. I really do. But the new Daniel Bryan is just on another level right now. So he retains. I'm not sure who he's going to feud with next, but it's time to put this AJ chapter to bed, unfortunately. Honestly, this is going to sound bad. I'm not interested at all in the Cruiserweight Championship. So, Buddy Murphy, congratulations. Here's the title.
You haven't been watching 205 live. That's the problem.
I know. But I just, yeah. I like Tozawa. I like Adami. And Kalisto's So, you know, I guess 50% of my interest just went out the window while 50% was cash. Balor. Beast gets beaten. My only question is, and my prediction is, the Beast gets beaten by the Demon. I know everybody wants the Demon. We haven't seen the Demon. But Brock Lesnar has to come out of that Universal Championship title. And I see the Beast getting beat by the Demon. That's what I want to see. In the Women's Royal Rumble, let's go back to Ronda Rousey. Rousey is defeated via Becky Lynch interference. Ronda Rousey becomes an entrant in the Women's Royal Rumble, wins, and names her champion that she wants to face as Becky Lynch.
So you think that's the story of how they make it happen. They don't make it as a cross-promotional, basically. Ronda wins and then goes and joins the SmackDown roster as she challenges for Becky.
Nope. They to make these ladies go to the main event, both of them go to the main event of WrestleMania. One of them needs to be in the Rumble, and I think it's Rousey. I think Rousey enters her first Royal Rumble, wins it, and names Becky as her victim at WrestleMania 35. In the men's Rumble, R-Truth. I mean, he's number 30. 30 wins, and the percentage of, yeah.
I mean, he's still riding a high after that all-expenses-paid vacation to Stamford, Connecticut.
And you know, Stamford is where the WWE headquarters is. Think of how many tips and secrets he learned about World Rumbles while he was there. In reality, the person that's going to go on the men's side and main event, I think it's going to be someone who we're all looking at, but maybe sleeping on. I think Drew McIntyre, destiny fulfilled, you know, the chosen one gets to go to the main event of WrestleMania. It's a stretch, but that's my dark horse. And unless Roman comes back with a clean bill of health, Drew McIntyre. And yeah, I know it's probably not going to happen. Oh, anything can happen in WWE.
That's very, very true. Anything can and will happen in the WWE, except Chris Benoit going into the Hall of Fame.
Well now. Okay.
That's like one of the few certainties that you can say will never happen in the WWE.
Well, with that, I mean, the Royal Rumble this weekend coming up is really exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see what happens. NXT TakeOver, the road to WrestleMania begins after this weekend. The Royal Rumble, who knows what surprises we may get. And then the next day will be full steam ahead on the road to WrestleMania 35 in New York. But the Royal Rumble is exciting. Can't wait to see it. Now, before we do go, though, I did want to bring up something. I mean, I've missed the beginning, but we can't leave without talking about it. Combat season, Combat Entertainment, it's here, and the combatants have been announced. Everybody can check out the video on Combat Entertainment's Facebook page. But it's combat season. Guys, are you ready to see 24 combatants do whatever it takes so one person can stand tall at the end?
I mean, it's upon, you know, it's, you missed the first show, which was preseason. So none of those matches were set for points. The combatants had not been announced yet. You know, the fans just got a taste of how combat rules will come into play. You know, there is a little bit of difference in the rules. You know, and got to see some new and exciting faces. As you mentioned, there's the selection show video on Combat Entertainment's Facebook page, hosted by myself and Mika, where we talk about the 24. There's also a couple matches from the Combat preseason show mixed in there. You know, I'm really excited because it is something a little bit different. You know, it is reminiscent, I guess, would be one of the easier ways to say, would be the early days of Ring of Honor, where it was about, you know, it was about the competition of professional wrestling, winning, you know, proving that you are the best. And, you know, I mean, it's a very interesting and unusual way, six blocks, with round robin style matchups, point scoring. You know, the season comes down to multiple. You know, there'll be a multi-man match in each block, and the winners of each block will compete in a mini tournament along with the two highest point scoring non-block winners, like as wild cards, basically. And that'll come in July. So we have, you know, first episode of Combat World in the combat season will be this Sunday, and it will go all the way through July until we crown a winner of the combat season.
Super, super excited. There are tons of names of competitors, of combatants that came out as the selection show Danny and I hosted with our Supreme Leader of Blacklist Uno and the Minister of Propaganda, Josh Wheeler, joining us and just kind of giving us an insight and the combatants. That was key for me to see who was going to step in. Now that we know and familiarize ourselves, and the combatants do so as well with the rules of combat, this is exciting. It's one of the things that just got me was the fact that it's all about the skill and the fight. It is literally about the fight and what you can do in the ropes, not outside of the ring. There's no running and ducking and hiding, that you literally have to have your skill. And all these combatants, they come with a special set of skills, but will it be enough to be the first winner of combat, of the combat season? That's what we're going to see.
Well, I mean, it's, you mentioned who's selected, but I think it's also kind of telling as who wasn't selected. And you know, we talk about this on the selection show, you know, certain names that people, you know, who followed Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment and who follow wrestling in the Southeast would expect to be included in something, and they were not, you know. But there are ways that other people who are not currently listed in the 24 can find themselves in combat season. There will be special challenge matches that can be made as the season goes on, where a combatant not in the combat season can challenge somebody, basically challenge them for their spot. If you beat this person, you take their spot in the tournament, including their points accrued. And then you will compete in, you know, in their position for the remainder of the season. So this 24, you know, more than likely will not be the same 24 that we see come the end of the season. There's a lot of interesting and intriguing matchups that we can see with the people that were announced. And, you know, it's, I mean, from what we've seen, it's the combat entertainment, you know, the combat rules, it makes for a very, very hard hitting style. You know, some nice technicality. We saw some of the guys kind of trying to implement new strategies already. And that's one thing I see as the season progresses, people finding ways to work within and around the rules of combat, and kind of use them to their advantage, you know, as it is different, slightly different than any of the rules that you will find at most, in most professional wrestling. And that's what makes it combat and not wrestling, is that it is, you know, the biggest thing is the rules are, there will be a set of rules and they will be adhered to. I think it's so much in professional wrestling now, the rules are very lax to give the fans a clear-cut winner and loser. You know, they kind of allow things to go for the sake of the entertainment overall. But, you know, we want to see who's the best. And, you know, we want people to all play within these same rules. And I think that the referees are going to be a bit harsh, and you know, we could very well see, you know, disqualifications and draws in a lot of these matches because of people violating rules. So I'm very, very excited to see what all combat season brings.
Yeah, so that would be this Sunday, 6:05 p.m. at Furnace 41 in Jonesboro. Anyone in the Metro Atlanta area, don't miss it out. And for those of you government employees who are affected by the shutdown, you get a free admission to the show. Combat Entertainment wants to make sure that all wrestling fans enjoy a good night of fun wrestling, not have to worry about shutdown and anything is going on. So all government employees, come check it out. You'll be able to see a great night of wrestling for free in Jonesboro, 6:05 bell time. So that is the show for tonight. Thank you for listening. We're glad to be back this year. We hope that this year for everyone will be better than ever. Can't wait to see what the rest of 2019 brings to all of us. But to find out what's happening with us, make sure you check us out on the Twitter machine. We're on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F. Endanger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and subscribe to the FOW Radio Network on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, anywhere podcasts can be heard. We'll be back next week. And until then, keep watching wrestling.